Great. Okay, so last time we were talking about Olam Haba, we talked a little bit about who we are, that we're a neshama, and we're a guf, we're a body, and we're a soul, and we're being pulled in these two separate directions, and we spoke, that was just the introduction, we spoke mainly about Olam Haba, about the world to come, and we gave two different ideas about what the world to come is, whether it's you go from this world to the next world, that was the Rambam, or is it a three-step process? The Ramban, Nachmanides, says you go from this world, and then after you leave this world, you don't go to anywhere in particular, meaning you don't go to the next step, you go to kind of a holding pen. He called it the Olam HaNeshamos, the world of the souls. And so after you go to that holding pen, so then comes the days of Mashiach, which he says is going to be the end of this world, and that is Tchiyas HaMeisim, the resurrection of the dead, and that's going to go into Olam Haba. That's going to go transition into the next world. And so I at the end, I said that I'm not taking sides, but I'm going to take sides on this one, that it seems like the Ramban is the more prevalent opinion. The Ramban is who the Ramchal, right? Moshe Chaim Luzzatto seems to hold like. I showed Rashi seems to hold like it. The Kalmali that we say for a deceased person, it seems to also support this opinion. And so it seems like the Ramban was the more normative idea. So the Ramban, yeah?
Yeah, oh, sorry.
So the Ramban has, you have this world, and then you have, and then at the end of this world comes the days of Mashiach, and then it's Olam Haba. So it's, and it comes the world to come. So you have a three-part process. And the significant thing about the Ramban, that opinion, is that after you leave this world, you go into the Olam HaNeshamos. You go into the world of the souls. And so the Olam HaNeshamos has a bunch of nicknames for it. We call it the Yeshiva Shel Mala. We call it Gan Eden. We call it Gehenim. And so that's what we're mostly going to focus on tonight. Is what is that Olam HaNeshamos? What is Gan Eden? What is Gehenim? What is its purpose? What does it look like? Not like what does it actually look like, but what does it function like? And we're going.
What place is there for what I always thought was the world of souls, where it's nothing but neshamas with the Shem? It's not a stopping place. I thought that was the terminal place.
I think we're just using the different terms for the same thing. It is the terminal place.
So afterwards, according to this, comes time of the Mashiach.
Until Mashiach comes and we all are brought back to life or something.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So as the Ramban says it, yeah, we have a body and a soul, and that's what the world to come looks like. Meaning what? Maybe I'm misunderstanding the question.
So, make sure who it is, Richard.
That, after the time of the Mashiach and so on.
Joel. Are you sure he's the right
everyone
person?
Everyone returns to the source, the Hashem.
It's a good question. So the answer is you're right, but it has different representations, you could say. So in the world of the neshamos, so they return to the source and they get some reward, but it's only partial, because the thing about being in the Olam HaNeshamos is you can come back, as the Ramchal says, the way of reincarnation. So you can come back, and as we'll talk, and hopefully we'll talk about that a little. The idea of coming back is that you're working on part of the neshama, and so therefore the neshama has other parts that needs, you have one mission in this world, so that's what you're working on, and the neshama is going to go back, go up and get rewarded, and then it's going to come back and work on other parts of it. Olam Haba is when there's no more coming back. That is the ultimate reward, and that is the ultimate closeness to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the main show. So the Olam HaNeshamos is just a holding place for now, until either the neshama comes back or until Tchiyas HaMeisim, until the resurrection. So you could stay there or you could come back. There's different, every person is different, but ultimately it's Olam Haba, where you're going to get the ultimate closeness and you're going to get the ultimate reward and everything else.
So we're not there in the meanwhile.
We are not there in the meanwhile, yeah.
So how many holding places are there? There's Gehenim, but that's only temporary.
It's really one big holding place with different sections. So you have the Gan Eden part of the holding place, and you have the Gehenim part of the holding place, and that's what we're going to talk about now.
The penthouse in the basement.
Exactly. And so we're going to use the Ramchal to help us. Oh, perfect timing. All right, now we can start. So we're going to use the Ramchal to help us go through this, because the Ramchal, I've spoken about his Derech Hashem, the ways of God, the path of God. I've spoken about his work, the Mesillas Yesharim. But there's one work that I think is less well known, and it's in the back of the Art Scroll, and it's his Maamar Ikarim. It's his essays on the fundamentals. And he starts with the Aleph, and he goes to Beis, and then he goes to Gimel, he goes to Dalet. So he starts off with like who we are and what are we and what are we doing here, and then he goes through everything. And he has a great I want to call it a chapter. It's, you see it right here. It's 2.5 paragraphs long about Gehenna and Gan Eden, and I think it's a great source to use that we can use as our structure, and we're going to jump off of it as we go through it. So essentially, he starts at the beginning. He says that Vihine, the very first line, the very first source, Vihine, Huchnu, Makomos, Lineshamos, Vitzes, Aminagof, that there are places prepared for the souls when they leave the body. Echad, Lenoach, there's one place where a person goes and they get rest, Imzocha, if they're married to, Ad Zmanatchia, until the time of the resurrection. This is what I was referring to, that he says until the time of the resurrection, but it could be that
it's a missing person.
Wow, okay. Well,
they should be found.
Yes. until either the neshama comes back into this world to work on something else, or maybe the neshama just stays there until the tchiyah. Actually, the echa the tzarif ba ba'onshin im avonos ba shimonin osa mimenucha. And there is another place which we call Gehenna, which is where a person goes to be purged of any. It says here punishments. I don't like that word, but I'm going to use it because it's what's on this sheet. Of any punish, I took the English translation off of Sfaria. But that's where they go to be purged for any punishments that they might have committed that might prevent them from getting that ultimate menucha, from getting that ultimate rest. So I said at the end of last time, and I'm going to repeat it, and I bet you I'm going to say it again, that when we talk about Gan Eden and Gehenna, we're not talking about the Christian heaven and hell, because that's not what we believe in. We're not into this idea of Christian heaven and hell. And I was thinking about it more recently, because one of the interesting discussions that's come up in the past week that people brought up to me is why don't we talk about this stuff more? Right? Why is this not the main thing that we're talking about all the time? There's so many people who don't know about this stuff. I wouldn't know about this stuff why you didn't make me take the class, right? In order to get my smicha, I had to take the class. And had I not taken the class and found out how interesting it was, I probably wouldn't know about this stuff. And so I was thinking about it, and I think it relates back to this, because there's a whole discussion: is Olam Haba, is the world to come, is it a reward, or is it a natural consequence? And really, it seems like it's a natural consequence. So what we're doing is we're building a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the better you build a relationship, the more happy you're going to be, the closer you're going to be, the more that person's going to treat you well. And so we build this relationship, we have this time, and so once we get to Olam Haba, so then we get all this good stuff, we get this closeness with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, which is what we're benefiting from. And so therefore, it seems to be that it's a natural consequence just based on our actions. And so if we believe in this Christian heaven and hell, where all you have to do is believe one thing, you commit yourself to this one belief, you can do whatever mishigas you want, just if you have this one belief, and then poof, we don't believe that. Because then you're not building a relationship. You would be focusing on nothing, essentially. Because how are you going to have a close relationship if you never built a close relationship? So we don't really believe that. We believe that the reward you get in Gan Eden, the same reward that you get in Olam Haba, it's a natural consequence that you have built yourself up, you've built this strong relationship, and you're benefiting from it. You're enjoying the fruits of your labor. Rav Chaim Volozhin, who I quoted a bunch last time in the Nefesh Chaim, and this is also from the Nefesh Chaim, he says that Gehenna as much as, like I said, I don't like the word onshin. I don't like the word punishment. He says it's not a punishment. It's the same thing in the opposite direction. It's a natural consequence. Because we were given, every morning we talk about how we are given a neshama tahara. We're given a pure soul. And so what happens is every time you do something you're not supposed to, you bring some sort of grime, filth, dirt, whatever you want to call it, into that soul. Schmutz. Schmutz, you bring some sort of schmutz into your... I remember one time I was in high school and I went to go... I stopped by my parents' friend's house and they were like Brooklyn Jews. And so she's like, oh, you got a little schmutz on your car there, honey. And she wiped it off with me. It always stuck out to me. Yeah, you got a little schmutz on your neshama. And so therefore he says that what has to happen is, like the Ramchal says, we have to be litzaref the neshama, which literally means, it means to like refine it. That's what you do to gold and to silver. It's your tzirufit. And so like it might be a little bit painful. It might not be a comfortable process, but it's a natural consequence, says the Ramchal. And the analogy I always like to use is like a cavity. I have had no shortage of cavities over the years. And every time I go to the dentist, they say, how are you? And I say, I would be much better if I was anywhere but here. And I always tell them, if I saw you outside of your office, we'd probably be really good friends. Don't worry, I don't feel the same way about doctors. I always say, if I saw you outside of your office, we'd be really good friends. And it's true. I've met a lot of dentists in my short time as a rabbi, and they're great. They're great people. When they're not sticking drills and other painful things in your mouth, they're great people. But it, you know, is getting a cavity filled a punishment? If you ask a dentist, maybe it is, but it's really not a punishment. It's just a natural consequence. Now, this is what happens to teeth. If you don't floss, you don't brush, you don't do whatever, so you get cavities. And then what has to happen is you have to get those cavities filled, and it's a painful process. It's not the greatest thing ever, but that is how it works.
It's something that I came across as a concept just, I don't know, six, 7 years ago. You know, and if you... do an avera inadvertently, so you bring a sacrifice. If you do it deliberately, there's no sacrifice. That made no sense. I thought it was a punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. It's a kapara to cleanse the sin. That's why you bring the sacrifice.
Yeah.
And the same thing, basically, it's true as far as I understand it. Gehenna is not a punishment for the things you did, unlike the Goyish hell. It's a kapara. It's the cleanse you so you're now capable of moving on.
100%. And I actually rediscovered something really cool that says almost exactly that. That we're gonna come to hopefully at the end. So that's
that was okay. Great though, because right. I really didn't understand it until you put it that way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a difficulty separating myself from the idea of punishment, and it isn't because it's a goyish concept. It's in Jewish literature, I've read, you know, over the years.
Yeah. So
in terms of punishment.
Yeah. So hopefully we're going to come back to this at the end when we talk more in depth about Gehenna, and we see that there is definitely this school of thought that that it's a punishment and it's bad. We should fear it, and we're going to try to leave tonight not feeling that way. That's our going to be our goal.
That's great.
That's going to be our goal. So jumping back into the Ramchal in this middle paragraph, so we're going to talk first about Gan Eden. He says, "V'hinei makom hamenucha nikra Gan Eden, the place of rest, that's Gan Eden. V'yesh bo madregos shonos." If you remember one thing, besides everything else I'm about to say, remember this. There's different levels to Gan Eden. Right, so this is what we talk about when we say the neshama should have an aliyah. The neshama should have an aliyah. They should go up. Where is it going up to? It's going up from level 1 to level 2 to level 3 to level 4. So v'yesh gan eden tachton, v'yesh gan eden elyon. There is a lower level and there is an upper level.
Do we know how many levels there are? It's just like infinity.
That's a good question. I'm sure somewhere in Kabbalah there is an answer.
Yeah.
I don't have the answer off the top of my head. But we have at least, I know that there's levels within levels. So right now he's saying that we have even two segments. So you have the lower segment, and then you have the upper segment. And so he says in the lower segment, Tachton, he says in the lower segment, basically what it is like, this part I don't get. And I'll read it in the English just for just for to make it a little bit easier. So he says, second line, in the lower one, the souls exist with the appearance of the body in which they resided, and they enjoy various types of spiritual enjoyments there. So I don't get how it's, because Gan Eden is a purely spiritual place. There's no bodies in Gan Eden.
No. He's saying that's not his model here.
The
lower level is not a purely spiritual place.
Well, no, he says it's the appearance of the body. You're not actually in the body. You're in the appearance of the body. And so and there, he says there are types of spiritual enjoyments there. And so he says this place was prepared with these types of enjoyments that were designed to exist there. So what it sounds like almost is and this is the way I was picturing it, is you wake up one morning and your parent says, you get chocolate ice cream for breakfast. I happen to be a big chocolate fan. Vanilla, not so much. Big chocolate fan. So you get chocolate ice cream for breakfast. And then the next day, and you're like so excited. You're like, that's amazing. I get chocolate ice cream for breakfast. And then the next day you wake up and they're like, you get chocolate ice cream for breakfast. And you're like, that's cool, 2 days in a row. And then the third day they're like, you get chocolate ice cream for breakfast. And you're like, this is starting to get a little bit old. But every day it's chocolate ice cream for breakfast. So it's an enjoyment, but it seems like it's this monotonous, like, Groundhog Day enjoyment that I'm not sure that you get worn out by it, but it doesn't seem like it's new and exciting all the time. Because then he goes on to say, in the higher level of Gan Eden, so the souls exist in the manner of actual souls. Again, still not 100% clear on that part of it, but it's not a big question. It's not something that like destroys my understanding. So he says, and they enjoy greater and more sublime spiritual enjoyments than the enjoyments of the lower one. So all of a sudden it's greater. So it's not just chocolate ice cream. It's chocolate ice cream with whipped cream and sprinkles, if you want to call it that. But here's the best part. And there exists passage of time there and different seasons for the varying different enjoyments.
There you go, not chocolate.
It's not chocolate every day. It's chocolate, vanilla, strawberry. It's all these. Strawberry wouldn't be my Gan Eden.
So how does this compare with Rob Cowell, I think, chapter 4 of A Search for Everything, he's talking about motivating the three different types of Jews. And the second group are people who say, well, as long as I get into Gan Eden, I don't need a box seat. The bleachers are fine. As long as I get there, I don't have to work so hard. I don't need a boxing. It sounds like, to me, like you're just talking about a world purely of souls. That it didn't seem to have this model of multiple levels.
Well, I think everyone agrees that there is different levels to it. And if you say I only want a box seat, so then that's a natural consequence to mean that like I'll get ice cream every day. I think so. You're just saying I'll get ice cream every day. I'll take something enjoyable. It doesn't have to be the best.
But what I'm understanding is we'll get ice cream every day, but if people on Earth do something in our honor, then we naturally raise up. Is that what you're saying when you're a Leah?
Yes. So let me, yes, I'll come back to that one.
I'm content having ice cream every day, and then people on Earth at the end of my time do things in my honor, then I automatically go to the next.
Yeah.
So it's interesting about
I work towards ice cream, and then I make lots of good friends on Earth, and they'll take care of me. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if you want to count on it.
No.
Yeah.
That whole thing of semblance of a body, I'm the only what I can make of that is that the body is limiting.
Yeah, the body, interesting. So you're saying it's you get limited enjoyment because, and that's why it's a semblance of a body. It's interesting, maybe. That's good. Maybe. And then he just finishes off and he says that, Umadrego Shonos Lananem Behem. He says, and also, even in the upper level, there's different levels for them to enjoy. He doesn't give a number. He just says that there are different levels. So you can have more enjoyment, you can have less, and you can have less enjoyment. So the before Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Daniel Glatzin, Torah High brought in Rabbi Daniel Glatzin to speak. He spoke at Adat Yeshurun. He gave a great speech, And so what he was speaking about over there, I mean, this he spoke about a lot of things. He spoke about, like, everything. But one of the topics that he spoke about, and this is what you were just saying, and it's really stuck with me, is that he says, on Rosh Hashanah, we open up the Sefer HaChaim and the Sefer HaMeisim. We have the book of the living open and the book of the dead open. So he asked the question, why? And it means that the living are being judged on Rosh Hashanah and the dead are being judged on Rosh Hashanah. So he asked the question, why are the dead being judged on Rosh Hashanah? Aren't they dead? Didn't they already get their judgment? And so he spoke at length about how it means that you go, and he didn't use the ice cream analogy. What he used was the analogy of where you live. You go and you live in a townhouse. You go in Gan Eden, you live in a townhouse. It's a nice townhouse. It's got the marble counters, new dishwasher. It's nice. You can't complain. And then your children or your grandchildren, they've been doing a lot of mitzvahs. They've really worked on themselves. They've really grown. And it's because of what you did. It's because you got them on that path. It's because of the decisions you made. So after Rosh Hashanah, you got to knock on the door and they say, guess what? We're going to move you out of the townhouse. You got a one bedroom single family house. It's great. You don't have to worry about people banging the wall next to you. Nobody's going to be living across the wall next to you. You got your own yard. And then he says, if that keeps going, the next year, so they're doing more things in your honor, and they're continuing to grow, and they're continuing to build, and it's all because of the decisions you made, so you got to knock on the door again. They say, guess what? Two bedrooms this year. And you keep going like that and like that. So you keep getting more and more and more. You get an aliyah, per se.
He's the gardener.
you do enough, you get a gardener too. So you just keep getting more and more and more, which is also why we say it's so important. We put such a big emphasis on children saying Kaddish for a parent, because the Ramah talks about this idea, how it's an aliyah for the parent, how it makes the parent's neshama go up. They get, if it's within the year and they're getting punished for something, so then it's less of a punishment, or if it's a year and they're working out their iniquities, so then it's less of painful. And if they're in Gan Eden, if it's after the year, as we'll talk about, so then it'll be even more enjoyable. And so there's actually, in the Sefer Or Zeruah, he quotes a medrash, and the medrash, fascinating medrash, tells a story, true story. Rabbi Akiva became privy to this neshama that was suffering in Gehenna. And so when it says that Rabbi Akiva came privy to a neshama that was suffering in Gehenna, neshamos don't just suffer in Gehenna, right? There has to be some reason that a neshama is suffering. So one of those reasons would be someone who lived a really not excellent life in this world, and they lived actually the opposite of an excellent life in this world, and so they suffer until they disappear. That's saved for the people who are really at the bottom. Also, one other reason is because there was no mourning that happened for them. Nobody went through the proper steps of mourning, and so therefore he comes up to this neshama and he says to the neshama, "How can I help you? How can I help you? What can I do to save you? What can I do to help relieve the pain that you're going through right now?" And this neshama says, you know, if I had a son who would say Kaddish for me, it would go away. And Rabbi Akiva says, do you have a son? Can someone teach him how to say Kaddish? And he says, you know, when I passed away, my wife was pregnant, but I'm not sure if it was a son or a daughter. So Rabbi Akiva goes and he finds this child, he finds it's a son, he teaches the son Kaddish, and the suffering goes away. And so we talk about this because It's a big schus, it's a big merit for the parents that you go and you say Kaddish for them, that you go and you do this, you help elevate their neshama. And I have a theory about this. Here's my theory. And as I was thinking about this afternoon, I strengthened my theory, and I used to think I was right, but now I definitely think I'm right. So there's a... We put so much emphasis on the child saying Kaddish. Nobody really else can say Kaddish for a parent. I mean, you could. Nobody can else really say Kaddish for a person. You could, but it won't have the same effects. It won't elevate in the same way. So why the children? And so I was thinking, Rav Herschel Schachter, who his son in a week and a half is coming to be scholar in residence, just putting it out there. Rav Herschel Schachter says that the mitzvah of Piri Rivia, the mitzvah to procreate, to have children, is to pass on our Jewish values, to pass on our Masorah, to pass on everything we believe. And so that's why we have children, so that we can teach them Torah, so that they can have children to teach them Torah. That's like the main thing. And so when we talk about our Jewish values, it's a very vague statement, right? We have Jewish values. I was recently looking at the website of the elementary school I went to, and they no longer teach Yadis, they no longer teach Judaism, they teach Jewish values. I was like, what does that mean? It means that they teach to be nice. I don't know, what does that even mean? Like, it's a very vague statement. But I think when we talk about our Jewish values, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that the world stands on three things: on Torah, on Avodah, and on Gemilas Chasadim. Torah is, it's learning Torah, it's doing the mitzvos, it's all that good stuff. Avodah means tefillah. Avodah means davening. And Gemilas Chasadim is kind acts. So it stands on those three things: on halacha, on dav, on tefillah, and on kind acts. And I think when a child stands up to say kaddish for a parent, that is, they are showing with no doubt whatsoever that they're upholding those three things. They're davening, they're saying kaddish, so they're with a minyan. So they're upholding the halacha. Hopefully they're going three times a day. They're doing all the things that the halacha demands of them. It's the avoda, it's the tefillah, because not only are they at davening and you have that, but if you look at the words of Kaddish, like, what are you asking for? You're davening for great things, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name should become great amongst the nations, meaning you're davening for Mashiach, essentially, and even especially the Kaddish that we say at a levaya, at a funeral, even talks more at length about Mashiach and all that stuff. And also, it's Gemilas Chasadim, it's you're doing a chesed, because you're doing for your parent something that, you don't have to do it. You really don't have to do it. You're helping them out in a way that nobody else can help them out, and you don't have to do it. But out of love, you're going through and you're doing it. And I think that's why it's so important that a child says kaddish for a parent, because it really exemplifies that parent gave them the right values, put them on the right derech, so that they can hopefully one day do the same for their children, and so on and so on, and so that they'll have a Beth Jacob of their own, that they'll be sitting around learning Torah on a Tuesday night as well.
Can I raise a question about that?
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting about that. On the one hand, you would think that the child gets the reward for saying Kaddish. And in this case, the father didn't raise the child at all. But so I think that's where it becomes complicated. So, but the father is the one who receives the reward.
Yeah. Well, I, it's a great question. I would say, the child's not going to walk home empty-handed, but it's a benefit to the parent that they also get the that they're also getting the Elias and Shalom. But I hear what you're saying. It's a great question. You never actually raise them, so how could he give them the Jewish values? Yeah, it's a great question. I'd have to think about it more.
And I just wanted to ask you to restate. What you had said about, let me see, was it a Gehenim? Did you compare Gehenim with Gan Eden? Oh, I forgot the question now. You had made a statement at the purpose of Gehenim?
So I was saying Gehenim is not necessarily to punish you. It's not that you did bad, so like, we're going to punish you, but it's a natural consequence. That you were given a neshama tahara, you're given a pure soul, and by doing a veiros, so then you put some sort of schmutz onto that soul. And so therefore, Gehenim is to clean off the schmutz. And so the word that the Ramchal uses, and a lot of people use this, the tzaref, means to like refine the soul, like the way you refine gold and silver. So how do you refine gold and silver? You put it into a super hot oven until it shines, until it's spotless. So that's essentially the same thing that happens to a neshama. So is it the most pleasant process in the world? But it's not like a punishment per se. Okay. It's a natural consequence.
Okay.
But us as human beings, like, we're not perfect, and we don't keep the 613 mitzvahs, all of them. So we all must have to go through it in some way or form.
Probably in some way or form. But there's also
you all might be. I'm just referring to myself.
No. Yeah, there's definitely some way or form to it. But also,
oh wow.
We'll come back to it. No, yeah. Hopefully, we'll come back to it. So the one last thing I want to say about Gan Eden, two last things actually I want to say about Gan Eden, is number one, I haven't really spoken about this. I'm not going to speak about this at length so much. But the there are upper worlds, right? It's upper worlds. If you go and say, you ask a Kabbalist, so they'll tell you about the different levels of the upper worlds. And so the Drushos HaRan, the Ran, says that Gan Eden sits at the bottom of the upper worlds, meaning it's a huge transition to go from the physical world to the spiritual world. So he says that this kind of lightens that transition. So you're not going from here like all the way up, because also, you know, the higher up you get, so the closer you get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the closer you get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more intense it is spiritually, and so that would be a hard transition. So he says that it's kind of it's a lower of the upper worlds, and he says that helps us understand a couple things. That also helps us understand the Gemaras that say that the neshama of a person hovers over the body after they pass away. Rabbi Bogopolsky always quotes this to families. The neshama is there. They're listening to the hespedim. They're listening to the eulogies. And so he always encourages people to speak at a levaya because the neshama is there. It also helps us understand why people go to the grave of tzaddikim, they go to the grave of family members and they daven, because it's not so far away. There is a sense of connection between where the body was laid to rest and the neshama, because it's not like all the way, it's very esoteric, but it's not all the way up high in the spiritual worlds, but it's in the upper worlds, but it's somewhere lower down there. I think this also helps us understand reincarnation, because we would say, how can you reincarnate if you were a body and a soul, and now you're just a soul? So you're like, how can they come back down? Or even how can we get in the neshama in the first place? So essentially what this is saying is the neshama never goes so far away. It never totally loses its connection to the physical world. It stays somewhere close by that it still understands what the physical world is. You know, when I went to Germany, I spent a semester studying abroad in Germany. So I learned the hard way that you become a gross American if you eat French fries with your fingers or pizza with your fingers. You can't do that. It's gross. People don't do that. You have to eat with a fork and a knife.
Oh, the Germans are so refined.
French fries with a knife?
No, just a fork. French fries, just a fork. The pizza, fork, and knife. And so you understand that by being close by. You get far away, you have no clue what that is. So l'habdil, so when the neshama's in the upper world, so if it's so far up and it's so far removed from Gashmias, it can't understand the physical world. But if it's lower down, it's somewhere closer to the physical world, it can understand it and it can come back into the body. Which, as an aside, I was thinking also reincarnation helps us understand this idea that we have a tafkid, we have a mission in this world. Because we're here to do one thing and one thing only. What that one thing is, it's a good question. You should ask Rabbi Bogopolsky. I have no clue what the one thing is. What the one thing is, it's for us to figure out through our journey of life. But we're here for one thing and one thing only. And that one thing is going to help our neshama in some way. We're fixing some part of our neshama that needs fixing. And so therefore, you get reincarnated. I keep doing that. I one track mind. You get reincarnated, and so you're coming to fix a new part. And so hopefully over time, you know, the more times the neshama comes back to this world, the more parts it fixes. And hopefully over time, it elevates the whole thing. So that's Gan Eden. So now let's talk a little bit about Gehenna. So we go into the last paragraph here in the Ramchal. I'll read it in English. Again, also, it says, and Gehenna is the place for souls that are fit to be punished.
Yeah.
And there they receive anguish and pains corresponding to that which is appropriate for them in accordance with their properties. And there are different levels of anguish, just as there are different levels of delight. So through this anguish, the sinners are absolved of their iniquity, and if they are fit for reward afterwards, they are purified from their sins, and they go to the place of rest, they go to Gan Eden. If not, they're punished until they are destroyed. And this almost never happens amongst Israel.
That has always been my understanding.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, we said, well, I think that these are, I think this is not a great translation. I read it, but I think it's not the best translation.
It really says something else.
I think it's not that he said something else. I think that the pain is, again, it's going back to this idea that we're being refined. So it's not that we're being punished, but it's like Rabbi Dessler says, and I saw this quote from Rabbi Dessler. I thought it was a great quote. He says that Gehenna doesn't teach good, but rather it burns away the bad. Right? It refines us. It's like gold and silver.
Yeah.
And so it makes us until we shine. And so how do you make your neshama shine? So it's by burning it away. It's by refurbishing it. Mm-hmm.
So everybody, maybe exception of a few tzaddikim, does some things wrong. You know, we're not perfect people. And it's only some people who go to Gehenna. So how do the other people, who are basically pretty good people, but still, how do they get rid of...
Interesting.
They get cleansed of that if they don't go to Gehenna.
So the understanding is that a lot of people, pretty much everyone, gets some time there.
That's what I think.
And that's why we say Kaddish A for the first year, because that's when judgment's happening, and that's B why we say Kaddish for 11 months out of the 12. Because the maximum punishment a person can get, maximum sentence, is 12 months. And so therefore we don't wanna testify about our parent that they're getting the maximum punishment. So we say 11 months. But for all we know, they got 1 week. For all we know, they got 1 day. We don't know. It's until they're refined, and then after that they go to Gan Eden.
So pretty much everyone will go through that
on some level, and that's also why we say at the yard site that their neshama should have an aliyah, because what we're saying essentially is at that point we assume definitely that by that point and every yard site further that they are in Gan Eden. And then we're wishing that their neshama should have an aliyah in Gan Eden, that should go up and up and up. So this idea of the name of Gehenna is a little bit elusive. If you look here at source number 2, the Gemara in Irvin, it says that the Shiva Shemos Yesh Le Gehenna, there are 7 names for Gehenna. And I list them: Shoa, Avadon, Uve'er Shachas, Uve'er Sha'on, Uve'tit Hayavin, Zalmavaz, Uve'eris Hatachtis. And then if you flip to the second side, though, so the Gemara says, Vesuleika. So there's 7 names, and there's no more names. Where it says, Va'ika Gehenna, what about the name Gehenna? And so then the Gemara goes on to explain that Gehenna is Gei Shamuka B'Gehiram Shako Yorid La Al Iske Hinam. It says that it's this valley, it's this deep valley that people descend down into for the Hinam that they do, that they're, for the Iske Hinam, their acts of vanity, their wasteful acts, the things that they did that were improper.
Actually, I believe it's behind the temple, isn't it? And the valley of whatever, however it's called, I haven't heard the word, Gehenna. And people used to be thrown.
No, not people, the
over.
The animal, young
oh,
people.
I heard people.
No, that was in the middle. No, that was in the middle. I don't think they were throwing people over. No, it's
not, the people. No one said the animal.
The animal is in the middle of the desert. When the Gemara talks here about a valley, it's not talking about a real valley. It's talking about a...
There is a valley called that behind the temple. I don't know if it's Gehenna or... it's something like that. It's very close.
I don't know. I've never heard of it. Maybe.
Valley of the Bones.
Yeah. I have to look into that one.
I did remember my question.
Yes.
It had to do with the Book of Life and the Book of Death, mm-hmm, that you mentioned. Could you just say what... your explanation was that why both are open?
Yeah, so he says that the living and the dead are judged because we're judged for our actions in the world in this year, and the dead are judged based on the actions of their descendants. So if you know, you sent your kid to whatever school, and now they're living a from life based on like whatever it is, so then that they're, and now they're having kids and they're sending them to a school, like all this, and they're teaching them Torah and whatever it is, they're lighting candles Friday night, whatever the mitzvahs are that are going throughout the generations. So they come to you every single year and they say, listen, because of you, this is happening and that's happening, so you get an upgrade more and more and more.
And how does that relate to were written in the Book of Life, or written in
so
the Book of Life.
So we're talking about different books. That book is the book meaning you're going to live out the year.
Yes.
So different books. So when we say the Sefer HaChayim and the Sefer HaMesim, so that's talking about, he's talking about how people are being judged by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the living are judged for their actions and what their next year is going to look like. And the dead are judged based on their actions, what it led to in the future. And so therefore they can still get rewarded or I guess you could also be downgraded. You can go from the one family house to the townhouse and so on based on the same thing as well. So it's two different judgments that are happening at Rosh Hashanah, on Rosh Hashanah. So Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler also speaks about how there are so many different names, so many different descriptions of Gehenna because it's so hard for us to grasp. It's so esoteric. And so therefore we have to use all these different descriptions to try to kind of paint a picture in our head, even though it's not necessarily what it's going to look like. The Ramban says that the whole reason for Gehenna, or not the whole reason for Gehenna, the whole punishment of Gehenna is we describe it as being this like fire and brimstone and all this stuff. But he says, like, how can you have a physical punishment in a non-physical place? How is that going to make sense? And so the Ramban says that it's not a physical punishment. It doesn't hurt like a cavity. It doesn't hurt like that way. But he says it hurts psychologically. Because this is a olam ha-sheker. This is the world of falseness. The Gemara talks about someone who left this world, and they go to the Olam Emes, as we call it, the world of truth, and they saw an Olam Ha'avucha. They saw a world that was twisted upside down. The people who they thought were at the top of the world, in that world were at the bottom. And the people who they thought were at the bottom of the world, in that world, they were at the top. So we just have a perception, but it's not a real perception. It's not until the Olam Emes that we get the real perception. And so therefore he says that in the Olam Ha'emes, so then we get to see exactly, that's what I did and that's what happened. And so it's not so much as a physical pain, but it's the psychological pain of understanding the real consequences for all of our actions. And so the last point I want to make about this is the Gemara in Brachos over here talks about what a person should do if they're going to make the wrong choice. So going to sin. So the Gemara says, La'olam yargiz adam yetzer tov, al yetzer hara. A person should always incite their yetzer tov, their good inclination, on their yetzer hara, on their bad inclination. And it goes, and it says, okay, what if your yetzer hara is gonna win? So then what should you do? It says you should learn Torah. And what if that works great, and if not, and what if your yetzer hara is gonna win again? It says that you should say Kriya Shema. You should recite about the unity of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And it says again, what if your Yetzer Hara is going to win? Then what should you do? And it finally says that you should remember the Yom HaMisa. You should remember the Day of Death. You should remember all of this stuff that's going to happen. And so the Musar movement, as I think was a little bit pointed out, not said explicitly before, really grabbed onto this idea that we should think about Gehenna and how awful it's going to be, and the punishments you get, and don't punish me because you don't want to go to hell, and all those things. And the Rav, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Joseph B. Soloveitchik, he said so poetically in his work, The Halachic Man, and I think this is, they say you have to end on a happy note, so this will be our happy note to end on, and I think this is great. So The Halachic, he wrote a couple works. He had The Lonely Man of Faith, where he talked about what it meant to be a lonely man of faith, to kind of, Jews are such a small percentage of the world, and Orthodox Jews are such a small percentage of the world, and so he spoke about what it means to be part of that such a small percentage who's really standing up against the whole world, and if you know Latin, I highly recommend reading it. The Halachic Man, it's very similar. He uses less Latin in Halachic Man, but he speaks about what it means to live a life al pi halacha. So he says here in the first paragraph, at the end of the first line, the halachic man of Brisk and Volozhin. So when he's talking about the halachic man of Brisk, he's talking about Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, his grandfather who lived in Brisk. And when he talks about the halachic man of Volozhin, he's talking about the Netziv, Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was in Volozhin. So he says the halachic man of Brisk and Volozhin sensed that this whole mood posed. Let me just back up one step. There was someone, Rabbi Blasser, as we'll see later on, who comes and he proposes to them in Volozhin that what they should do is they should adopt Musar into their yeshiva. So they should adopt this idea that we should think about fire and brimstone and all these things and don't go to Gehenna and all this stuff. And so he says, the halachic man of Brisk and Volozhin's sense of this whole mood posed a profound contradiction to halacha. He says that by living a life where you don't want to go to hell and you want to avoid all this stuff, so that he says that that's not what it means to live a life of halacha and would undermine its very foundations. Halachic man fears nothing. I'm going to read that again. Halachic man fears nothing. One more time. Halachic man fears nothing. We're not afraid. We don't live a life. We're not afraid of these things. Will most people experience this on some level? Yeah, most people will experience this on some level. I'm sure most people have gotten a cavity filled also. Right? But he says it's not something we fear. Why? For he swims in the sea of the Talmud, that life-giving sea to all the living, period. Basically, he says that we're living amongst the Kaddish Baruch Hu. If you live a halachic life, you're living amongst the Kaddish Baruch Hu. The Sea of the Talmud is a world. When he lived life, he didn't live life based on like, okay, this is a table and that's a chair. He lived life on like, these are halachic principles. Everything that happens in life is a halachic principle. And so therefore, he saw God in every single thing he did because he saw the world as halacha. So he says, if a person has sinned, and this I thought was the most profound, if a person has sinned, then the halacha of repentance will come to his aid. As you were saying before, we have shogeg and we have mazed. We have things you do on accident, we have things you do on purpose. The things you do on purpose, so you can't repent for, because you made that conscious decision. But the things you did on accident, he's not afraid of those things, because we have tools to get around those things. And so therefore, you can take the iniquity off of your neshama by following the halacha. It's not just every time you make a mistake, so then all of a sudden it's like, okay, that's another minute in Gehenna, and another minute in Gehenna, and another minute in Gehenna. But really, if you follow the halacha, so then it'll be minimal at best. And the better you follow the halacha, the more minimal it will be. It's like brushing your teeth. I'm a horrible flosser. Just ask my dentist, right? And I pay the price for it. And so that's essentially what he's saying over here as well. If you live the halachic life, so you're swimming in the sea of the Talmud, so then in that case, there's nothing to fear, because it's not going to be, living such a life is to one's benefit. So then he says in the second paragraph, Rabbi Blasser, in support of his position, cited the statement of the sages. And he goes through and he cites the exact Gemara I just showed you from Brachos 5a, where it says that a person should incite their Yetzer Tov over their Yetzer Hara. And if they're going to be subdued by it, so then they should learn Torah. They should say Kriyat Shema. They should remember the Om HaMisa. They should do everything they can to fight it. So evidently, he says, Rabbi Blasser emphasize the sages prefer the effectiveness of the remembrance of the day of death to the study of Torah. For we do not have here stated that at times occupying oneself with Torah will not subdue the evil impulse, while the remembrance of the day of death will vanquish it. Meaning, the Torah is like, seems to be on the lowest rung, and then Kriyat Shema, remembering the unity of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and then remembering the Yom HaMisa. But Rav Chaim Soloveitchik replied, if a person is sick, we prescribe castor oil for him. However, it is certain that if a healthy person ingests castor oil, he will become very sick. So he says this idea that we think about Gehenna, we should avoid Gehenna, the punishment of Gehenna, we don't want Gehenna. He says that's for the sick. That's for the people who we've lost hope in any other solution. And so that is like last result. That is what we're going to go for. That's what we're going to reach. We're going to reach for the life raft. But other than that, he says, we don't need it. That's not how we live. We live a life where we live, where we learn Torah, we experience the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that will be our, I was about to say saving grace, but I don't think I can say that. And that'll be the thing that protects us. That if we live such a life, so then we have nothing to worry about. So just to sum it all up, and then I'll take any last questions people might have. What do I want you to leave knowing tonight? So I want you to know that according to most thoughts, we don't leave this world and go straight to Olam Haba. We leave this world and go to the Olam HaNeshamos, the world of the Neshamos. That's what we call Gan Eden. That's what we call Gehenna. That's what we call the Yeshiva Shalmala. And it's all within the Olam Shel Emes, the Olam Emes, the true world where we see life as actually it is, not just the way we see it here in our very skewed vision because we're, again, we're being pulled in these two opposite directions. And so we have a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Hara. There's so many things that are skewing our vision here. Gan Eden has multiple levels to it, and every level gets better and better and better. We have the chocolate ice cream level, and then we have the buffet level, right? We have where you get the same reward every day, and it's great, but, it, you know, I love chocolate ice cream, but I could use something else every once in a while. Then you have the buffet where you get your choices. It changes all the time. And then Gehenim also has different levels to it. And we said that Gehenim, it's not a punishment, it's a cleansing. It's to make sure that our neshama, when it gets rewarded, is as pure as when it was put into our body. And we said that most people are going to have some experience, they're going to have some experience with Gehenim, but after that, after whatever amount of time the person is there for, so then they get to go to Gan Eden, with, except for rare exceptions, which is why we talk about people having a Elias Neshama in Gan Eden. Their Neshama should go up in Gan Eden, because every single person, hopefully sooner rather than later, is going to get to experience the joy of Gan Eden, which the Ramchal says you're in Gan Eden until Tzchias Mesim, until you get reunited with your body and Mashiach. And then finally, we talked about the Ramchal and reincarnation, and how the neshama gets rewarded in Gan Eden, but it can reincarnate. It can come back into this world, work on another part of it, and in theory, it can just go back and forth. So you could be in Gan Eden, come to this world, work on something, go back, Gan Eden, this world. So you get rewarded every time you go until hopefully everything has been fixed. And then the Neshama gets to rest in Gan Eden until Tchias HaMesim, the coming of Mashiach, B'mehir V'yameinu. Amen. All right. If anyone has questions, I'm happy to answer.